Have you been injured at work and need help getting the benefits you deserve? Call me, attorney Steve Marte, at 312-312-HURT for a free consultation. That's 312-312-HURT. I will personally handle your claim from start to finish. Call me, Steve Marte, today.
This is
Waddle and Sylvie.
Waddle and Sylvie.
We are ESPN 1000.
WMVP, WSHE, HD2, Chicago.
A Good Karma Brands radio station.
Mellor, you know the best fight in baseball, at least the one that I remember. It's not even close.
Robin Ventura and Nolan Ryan?
No, not the, I don't even know.
I didn't even think that was.
So like.
That was a pummeling of an old man pummeling a man who didn't know what to do.
So Ventura charged the mound on Nolan Ryan. He's told the story before. I think he was like. As he was like halfway out,
yes.
He's like, what the hell am I doing?
I'm charging Nolan Ryan.
Yeah, it's like an out-of-body experience. Then he was like basically rubbing Robin Ventura's head, but he was giving him the blows to the top of the head. He had him in a headlock,
yes,
right?
Yes, noogies.
No, that wasn't the one. Like this was a brawl, and I just Googled it to watch it again. Was the 2000 fight. Between the White Sox
and the Tigers. Bobby Higginson, you bastard.
I was looking for the name. Thank you. Bobby Higginson was the catcher. He was like their second or third string catcher who was like completely all in on that brawl, wasn't he?
So, well, Higginson was Robert Fick.
That's who I
was the catcher.
Of.
No, but both
Higginson
of them.
Higginson was a pretty good player early in his career,
correct,
right?
An outfielder. Yes.
And then he struggled like after a few years.
Yeah, he was like a 20 homer guy for a couple seasons.
What was the other guy's name? The catcher?
Robert Fick. Both of them bastards.
Fick was the guy who was like super dirty. And if you've never seen it, Tyler, have you ever seen the highlights of this fight?
I don't think I've seen this one, no.
And this was like a memorable season for the White Sox. The 2000 White Sox was a very fun team, one of those division championships that you weren't expecting right at the beginning of the year. It was early in the season. A lot of people thought it fueled the White Sox the rest of the way. And the brawl had many stages to it. It was out in the outfield. People were going and just walloping on each other. There's one point where Keith Falk emerges from one of the pile with blood coming out of his face. There was blood. There were punches. There were people getting jumped. It was a free-for-all where many people got suspended.
Yeah, 16 members of the Tigers and White Sox in whole and all were suspended for a total of 82 games.
That was as good as it ever got for me.
Maglio got 5. Also, Fick and Bobby Higginson both got 5.
Yeah.
They got the most.
Every now and then it's fun. I mean, you don't want to. It's baseball. Arguments are dumb, and beating guys with a baseball when you could do damage as hard as these guys throw is stupid, and it's old school. But having a fight every now and again on a Sunday afternoon, somewhat entertaining. People in the Twitch chat, a couple people have mentioned Odor. Was the fight with the Blue Jay.
Jose Bautista.
Was that a playoff game, too?
No.
It was after. Remember, Jose Bautista had the bat flip of all bat flips to win a playoff
game.
Right.
Flip of all time, yes.
That's what I remember.
And then the next season, Rougned Odor gave him a forearm shiver when he slid into second base.
Right.
And so
Bautista slid into second.
Yes.
And got up all chesty.
Yes.
Like he was going to do something to Odor. And Odor's like, I'm not playing that way. If you want to fight, here's one to the face.
Yes.
And he
it was like his forearm. So it wasn't like a fist, but it was enough to send the message.
Yeah. Well, Carmen and I were at the infamous Cubs Sox fight.
Barrett and
Michael Barrett. Like, it was a punch to the face that didn't do a lot of damage.
AJ, yep.
The AJ fight. Rich Hill was on the mound there. Every now
Old
and then.
Old Dick Mountain.
What's that?
Old Dick Mountain on the hill.
312-332-3776. So Rob's got a good one, too. Robin, where are you calling from? Mississippi?
Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Very
home
good.
Of Brett Favre.
There you go. Ole Miss.
Kyle Farnsworth. I forgot who the player was on the Reds that made the bad decision to charge the mound, or maybe it was about 4 steps before Kyle got there, but that was just awesome.
Paul Wilson.
Paul Wilson, right.
Paul Wilson was the pitcher, and it came back up because Kyle Farnsworth was trending last week because he's a bodybuilder. Now, have you seen the picture of Kyle Farnsworth?
have not.
It shouldn't surprise you if you remember Kyle Farnsworth. It supposedly surprised everyone because he's so jacked and he looks like he's roided up. But like he was always a big dude who liked to wrestle a bit and was super strong. But Google the Kyle Farnsworth picture and tell me what you think. All right,
Sylvia, I got one more.
Sure.
Do you remember you brought up the Nolan Ryan and Robin Ventura? Do you remember the sports awards at the end of the year when Jerry Reinsdorf went up to announce that Robin Ventura was Chicago White Sox Player of the Year? And the way he introduced him was, he's the only man to ever have 6 hits off of Nolan Ryan in one game. Unfortunately, they were all to his head.
That's great. I didn't know. I don't remember that. That's very good. Rob, thanks. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
If you want to weigh in, 312-332-3776. The other weird story from baseball, I didn't bring this up too, in the good, the bad, the dirty, because this is like trending around Chicago. If maybe it's just sort of the percenters who are in on, you know, when you're on Twitter and you think like the whole world knows about this.
Yes.
But it's really like only a small percentage of real people who live in that world. There's a picture of a guy sitting at the Sox game with his daughter.
Yes.
And he's texting some vulgar stuff to someone on the other end of the phone. And I clicked on the video and watched it, and I said to myself, this cannot be true.
It's not real.
I don't believe it's real.
A deep fake.
And I can't. Yes, it had to be photoshopped or put in. And I feel bad for the dude. Unless it was real, but it was. So it's a guy sitting in his seats with his daughter.
Or it could be granddaughter, too.
Okay, something. It's an older guy.
Which makes it even weirder, if that's the case.
And he was texting graphic sexual stuff.
Yes. And I say
I'll keep it at that.
It could be his granddaughter because the size of the font leads us to believe that the man who's texting is... Probably he's older than Waddle, right?
I don't know. He just could have had
his font's bigger than Waddle's phone font.
Yes. I know. Does Waddle have big phone fonts?
Oh, yeah. Well, he doesn't have the biggest phone font, but he's a step up from your standard phone font.
I think I'd rather give up the iPhone if I've got to go to large font. I'm the large font guy. I'm like, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't be reading text.
Like that's
or
a
get
sign.
Some glasses, you know.
That's a sign. You're on. You're on your phone too much if you need to go to the next phone size font size up.
And then someone from behind the seats is like, you're always being watched. Somebody is
recording,
videoing
yep.
him and zooms in on the screen where you could read, but I don't believe it's real. I don't know if anyone in Twitch or anyone on Twitter can...
I don't know how you could confirm it would be...
But I
real.
What Tyler, I alerted you to this.
Yeah, I'm very adamant that this is fake because of the... Or I shouldn't say fake. It's staged. It's staged because you look at what happens on the phone, all right? First of all, the number at the top is a... You can see, like... You can't see the numbers, but you can see it's a number. It's not someone's name that's saved in the phone, right?
Okay.
So there's step one.
Hold on. Well, okay, guy, I'll let you finish.
Okay. And then, on top of that, too, who scrolls all the way to the top of your message when you send something like that? Like, right after, it's just so convenient that,
like they were scrolling.
That you're scrolling all the way up to the top to show the entirety of the message.
So this is someone just looking to get clicks on a funny video?
No, it's
and
staged.
It was staged.
Yeah, it's staged because the guy behind it clearly set it up with the guy in front of him.
That's what I'm saying,
who
right.
Who filmed someone texting also?
I don't know. Why? Like, I don't know.
I can see, okay, maybe you see someone texting in the background of a video, but no one goes intently and films somebody else texting on their phone at a baseball game. It's
unless,
staged.
To play devil's advocate here, if you've observed said person in front of you texting some nefarious, debaucherous stuff over the course of the game.
Why are you reading somebody's phone?
Well, because you can't miss it when the font's that big. When the font is that big, it's
impossible. Don't you feel dirty reading someone's phone that you don't know?
I'm glad you brought that up. That is the number one sign, in my opinion, of someone who is untrustworthy.
Like, you just look away.
The classic screen peeker.
I could read the screen, the font's really big, but I don't... It's his private matter.
I agree with you guys, but there are certain words... When they're lit up in 25-point fonts, You know what I'm saying? And they're screaming out to you that it's hard to... It's like a car crash when you're driving by. You can't help but not look in certain situations.
Different.
It's not. There's certain words that trigger you.
You have to concentrate and read this. A car crash is like, whoa.
Not with the font that big, I don't. It's right in your face.
Look away. Look away.
If that word's in your face, it's hard to look away, my friend.
I'm not that intrigued by some random person who's sitting a row in front of me's personal life.
Do your thing, big man. I
disagree when it's a dude who looks like he's 65. It's a weirdness to it.
You're just going to shut it off?
Listen, I mean, there's a lot of downtime in baseball. Sometimes you just need a distraction.
No, I'm not talking about shutting off the phone. I'm saying shut it off when you're 65. Who cares if he's 65?
No, but I'm saying that's
45.
Sure, but that's the oddity of the whole situation.
Yeah, promo code ESPN.
Yes. Why not? All right, 312-332-3776. We're talking about the baseball fight. If you want to weigh in on the White Sox, have you ever been through a season in Chicago sports that's a comp to what the White Sox have gone through? Just with the, like, to me, it reminds me now, it's apples and oranges because I had my heart and everything involved in the 04 Cubs. So I looked at the 04 Cubs through a different lens. The 03 Cubs came that close. They lost, obviously, in Game 6 in the Bartman game, and then they could have won Game 7 to the Marlins. They lost that one, too. And then they came back, and they reloaded. And they brought back Greg Maddux as, like, their fifth starter. They traded for Nomar. They acquired Derek Lee to play first base. He killed them in the postseason. They're like, okay, he's going to be our first baseman instead of Eric Karros. And then they added Michael Barrett. And, like, they added good players, and they struggled all year, never really got on a roll, and then they were eliminated in the final week of the season, I think when there was one wild card team. And it was just, it wasn't enjoyable. It was always something that was the year that Stoney was fighting with a lot of the players. Mike Remlinger was making a line in the clubhouse of where the media can cross and where they can't cross. It was the year that Kent Merker got into a fight with Stoney and Chip Carey over stuff they were saying on TV. Dusty was letting everything happen, and it was a massive underachievement. This year, the Sox are the windows wide open. This is supposed to be prime open year. And, you know, it surprised me, truthfully, when Len joined us on Friday, and Len even said, and Len's usually glass half full. He said, sometimes it's not just not your year. How are Sox fans feeling? Do you feel like this is one that's not your year? Or can this easily, maybe not so easily, but can this still be turned around by getting healthy and by playing better baseball? Because no one is running away and hiding with this division.
You know, I'm trying to be, as a Sox fan, I try and look at the positives here. But, you know, the problem is, too, there's a lot of, like, I think there's something to what Len's saying because they still do have Cease doing what he's been doing. They've unearthed Johnny Cueto from the scrap heap, right? Michael Kopech has still been, you know, one of the better starters in all of baseball. So with all of that, you still find yourself in a situation where you're 4.5 games back right now, and not just 4.5, but you're also behind two teams, which makes it that much more difficult because only you have to jump both of them.
Yeah, in but order they're to, not that good.
I know they're
team.
Not that good. You're right, Sylvie.
After all that with the Orioles, they're what? Still 5.5 out?
Is it 5.5
now? 5.5,
yeah. 5.5. Like, I looked the other day expecting with this recent, the loss to the Blue Jays and then 3 out of 4 to the Orioles, I thought I'd look up and they'd be 7.5 or 7. And they still, it's always been in that 4, 4.5, 5, 5.5 range. And even with everything going wrong, there's still a handful of games and a good 10-day stretch from being right back in this thing.
You're right. You're right about that, and they certainly have plenty of games to go with both the Guardians and Twins coming up, especially late in the year. But it also has that feel when you look around the rest of the league and you look at what the Yankees and Astros just in that series. And even if you get there, this team, I'm someone who understands that just getting to the playoffs and weird things can happen. But, man, it really feels like it's the Yankees and Astros year right now. I don't even know. You're trying to win the division. You want playoff baseball. But it doesn't – like, last year it felt like if they got there, things could happen. This year, I feel like if they get there, it's going to be, in all likelihood, they'll be gone before they get to the ALCS.
I'm with you on, I have basically, in my mind, written them off as a World Series contender. But as a division winner, I think there's a difference. I believe there are too many things that trouble this team that can go wrong in a short series when games are on the line, whether it's like Abreu. What's Abreu doing in the ninth inning yesterday?
Twice.
You know, like, and I know Danny Mendick's out now, and for the most of it, he played well. But that tag-up situation with, you know,
Mendick's boner, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Reese McGuire was going to score from third.
Against the Blue Jays.
And then there's Danny Mendick getting thrown out at second. Tim Anderson getting picked off of first. They make too many bad defensive plays. They are fundamentally flawed, where I believe in a series that will be exposed. But I still believe there's enough talent there where they could win the division.
And they've had the most runners thrown out at home.
At the plate,
yeah,
right.
13, right?
Yes.
Leading the majors. So
it's a weird managerial decision, letting a guy go too long. And how do Sox fans feel about these five guys, we're instructing them to not run hard in certain moments?
You know, we played it earlier, Sylvie, but I don't know if we really got into it, too. I'm curious what you think about the idea of Tony voicing that. It may be true, and so maybe he's trying to take heat off of his players because he doesn't want them to be criticized if they're not running out of ball. He doesn't want fan base to get on those players for not running hard, if that's his intention, because that's the only thing I can really read. Because
do you want to play? You play this.
Sure.
So this was Tony. This was, when was this? Saturday morning, I think. I think I heard this Saturday. Mason, actually, I wanted to put some... not a great show promo. We have 5 minutes of White Sox. What's the show? The
White Sox Weekly.
White Sox Weekly. We're listening to White Sox Weekly.
Oftentimes,
and I'm like, okay, it's time. Like, boys, what music you want? And Mason demanded that we keep it on Connor and the White Sox.
It's a good White Sox fan, right there.
He wanted some more White Sox.
Damn,
he's
right.
Getting into the weeds. Wait till he gets plenty of internet access and he starts going through blog holes and stuff like that.
Blog holes. I have a whole story for you later. And I heard the bite about LaRue, or I heard Connor announce this, and I giggled inside. I got to say, so play it.
Yeah, I think it's a really important point to make, and I hope the fans hear this and tell their friends this, because yesterday, first of all, we get beat. We're not going to play and coming back. It looks like we're dead, but sometime when you hit a ball and a guy is just jogging under control of first base, we have five of our nine players that are under instructions from the training staff. Look, if the ball is a routine out, do not push it because you're liable to break. And that's Jose, and it's Vaughn, it's Robert, it's Pollock, and I'm missing one other one.
T.A., Tony.
Who would be? There's a fifth one there.
It's T.A.
If I think about it long enough, I would
Tony,
know.
It's T.A.
But, you know, that makes the club look like it's not hustling, and the reality is they're being told to play in control.
It's Tim Anderson, your shortstop, one of your best players. My thought is, I've heard this before with other players, singular players. I believe, my thought is, mm-hmm. without having any sort of physical therapy background, without being a doctor, if there are five out of your nine guys who may break when they sprint, you're doing it wrong. It may not be wrong to tell them, hey, if it's a routine grounder, don't bust your ass. We want to make sure you're okay. Fine. But if those guys are in position, a lot of them with young legs. Robert's a young guy.
Yep.
T.A.'s still a young guy coming off of an injury. Who's the other young
Vaughn.
Guy?
That was the one that was shocking to me because I'm trying to remember. Does he have some sort of catastrophic leg injury or some hampered
I don't
leg,
know.
Like a hamstring or but a quad
you're,
or
you're,
something?
You're not doing something right if five of your nine players in the lineup, you have to instruct not to run hard for fear of breakage.
Here's the thing, too. I mean, listen, it's not the end of the... Like, I'm not like... bust your ass and hustle ever. I'm not
right.
I'm not
that's common sense.
Like right. I'm okay with like it's a routine ground out. Like I don't need a guy pulling a hamstring because he's trying to, you know, be out by 5 feet instead of 10 feet.
Like the Reese McGuire argument. Remember the Reese McGuire? Yes. Danny Mendick should not have caused it. Reese McGuire did bust his ass. Yeah. As Connor told us, this was the best thing. It's simple physics. When two players are leaving the same base at the same time, and Danny Mendick is faster
than Reese
McGuire.
Who's
the first guy? So even if Reese McGuire was busting his ass, Danny Mendick still would have gotten thrown out because he would have reached the tag sooner than Reese McGuire would have reached the plate.
But now that Tony La Russa has outed which players on his roster don't run hard on routine ground balls, it is actually, he has given his team a strategic disadvantage.
Right.
Hey, by the way, if Tim Anderson hits a grounder, since he came off the injured list, he's not busting it the way he used to because we don't want him to hurt himself.
I just don't understand why, A, so many guys are getting hurt, and then when they do come back, they're not right. Why isn't Aloy right? Why isn't T.A. right? Why isn't Luis Robert right? Why isn't A.J. Pollock right? Why isn't Vaughn right? There's too much smoke here.
And one other thing, you mentioned Aloy, Moncada.
I was just going to bring up Moncada,
too. When those two are Moncada in the lineup, that's a potential 7 out of 9 players who theoretically won't be running hard if it's a routine grounder.
And think about Vaughn, too. Like, how many times have we seen Vaughn hit a ball off the wall and get a single?
Yeah.
I mean, it's happened, I think, and like 2 times in the past week.
He's been hitting there's too much stuff. Like, I don't have a problem telling somebody. But hearing Tony say that they could break, my question would be, let's get to the real reason. Why are they all in this position? What are you guys doing where guys can't run hard without fear of breaking? Tony said breaking.
Yeah, no, he did.
You could break.
And I don't know what the fine line is. You know, again, we don't have, none of us are physical trainers. None of us have our medical degrees. But at what point are they allowed to run now? Like they're playing on the field, right? At a certain point, if you're healthy enough to be out there.
Right, or should they not even be playing?
That's the thing.
If you're worried the TA is going to break, TA, how important he is, maybe he should be out another week.
And he's a great hitter. He will probably, in all likelihood, be at the All-Star game again this year. But part of his value, too, is his ability on the bases. Like, that's what Tim Anderson brings to the field.
Like, if you do go on a run, do you want to go into the playoffs like the Bulls did with Zach LaVine and Zach not be right? Like, again, there's time to get them right. There's still time. Like, should they be playing? And what, I just don't understand.
And would they be
playing? I would like a conversation with Rick. What's going on? I know you changed your staff, but this isn't, and I know there are injuries all over, but hearing this with so many young guys, this is a young team generally. And you have a fear that if they run, they could break?
Would they be playing if the record was better? If they weren't 5.5 games back, would all these players still be playing right now?
Are you saying they could have taken longer with TA?
Are they desperate right now because they're 5.5 back and they feel like they need to start getting some wins, piling some up here? Would you give these players more time before they got back out on the field?
So how do you feel about this? 312-332-3776. Did this irk you? Or are you going to defend the White Sox on this? About hearing 5 of 9 guys in the starting lineup cannot run on a routine play for fear of breaking. And what's going on with all these muscle injuries with the White Sox now in a couple of years? The Bulls have the same exact thing. 312-332-3776. Also, Darnell Mooney spoke over the weekend. I want to play you some of that. That was on Redline Radio. Interesting stuff that he had to say about Matt Eberflus. It's next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
When did the Angels start their games? What are we looking at tonight, boys? How late?
8:38.
Oh, 8:38. That's not bad. It's pretty good for a West Coast game.
People love the local 6:40 starts. And I got to say, I agree. The 6:40 start is underrated.
Yes, it is. Especially when it's a West Coast game. And it's their 6:40 instead of the old 9:30. That's a tough one, especially in baseball. Those things, I mean, one in the morning for a June baseball game if it goes 4 hours.
Not worth it.
I don't think so. 312-332-3776. Bleck and Abdallah will be in here a bit. Tyler and Meller are with me today. We'll have an announcement tomorrow, a station announcement at 4 o'clock to bring to you. My wife was even texting me, asking me what the announcement was. I'm like, you'll have to wait till 4 like everybody else tomorrow on the Waddle and Sylvie Show. So check that out. Tom in Oak Lawn wants to weigh in. A White Sox 2022 comp.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, I'm almost 40, and I run between three and 6 miles for like five days out of the week. So if anybody's legs should be breaking, it should be mine, not these young White Sox players, not Robert or Anderson or whatever for running. But like my comp for this team was the 2007 Bears, because they went to the Super Bowl, lost to the Colts and everything like that. And in the previous year, they had won the division and such. And so then you're thinking, okay, even though they're supposedly that Super Bowl curse, maybe they, you know, can rise above it and take that extra step and make it to the play, at least make it to the playoffs again. And they don't even do that, and they sit below 500, and they underachieve, and Rex Grossman is Rex Grossman, yeah. Rex Grossman, and we got a
Cowering.
And then there was the whole thing with Brian Griese having to apologize for winning a game in Philadelphia because he ran his own plays and all that debacle.
It was an unlikable year. The 07, yes.
Yeah.
It was very unlikable. 07, 08, 09, I believe, after they were at the height of being this close to winning it all. I don't believe they made the playoffs in any of those years until Jay and got over here. And in 2010, they had that sort of surprising run and lost in the NFC Championship game. Then they go 8 more years without making the postseason again. Tom is in Joliet. Tom, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'd like to touch on a little bit about all the large amount of injuries that the White Sox have had. I think each case is a little bit differently. Like Tom from Oak Lawn had touched on, you got guys like Luis Robert and Yoan Moncada who, you know, especially Moncada, they can't go, you know, 2 or 3 games without wincing after running to first base or running from second to home or running to, you know, track down a fly ball in center field. And then you got the case of Eloy Jimenez where it just seems like he is not an intelligent player in the field, whether he's on the bases or, you know, going for a fly ball, he's lunging at the back of first base or he's jumping, you know, to try and rob a home run in preseason. And Tim Anderson, I think, is fine. I just, you know, his groin injury just seemed like a bit of a freak accident, and those nobody can really control. But I'd love to know what these guys are doing in the off season and what they're doing to prep for game day. Because I know the popular opinion is, you know, you always hear fire the training staff, fire the, you know, the conditioning staff and whatnot, but from what I've read, I thought they got rid of a chunk of the training staff at the end of last season. So accountability, I think, has to start coming on some of these players.
That's what I would ask Rick. You know, well, I don't know about, like, they had the lockout and the Sox, to their point, you're right. Like, it was sort of, they were locked out. They could not communicate with their teams, so they had to be on their workout program. They had a limited spring training, and that's probably why injuries are up everywhere. But it just seems like this Sox team has more vulnerability to these soft tissue injuries these last couple of years. And the Sox, to their credit, did make the change. But if I had Rick on, I would say, Rick, you're the same guy who admitted that you were pissed off about last year. How are you feeling watching this? How do you feel when more than half your lineup cannot sprint to first base all the time for fear of breaking down?
Yeah. And I know did Han know about all the injuries Eloy had with the Cubs system? Because I also read that Eloy was hurt his 2 or 3 years in the Cubs system.
Yeah, Jesse will tell you he was an injury.
You know.
That Jesse, the Sox have fought that. The Sox have said, no, Eloy is not injury prone. Jesse has countered that he is and that there are injury histories with the minor leagues, but we'll see. I mean, so far it seems like Jesse's right. And I don't even know where that rehab is right now.
Yeah, that's it's and you also wonder too, are they handling the rehab right? Because why was Aloy even rehabbing that early?
I mean, originally
it was supposed to be a 12-week process, and he's back in 5.5 weeks, or he was trying to come back in 5.5 weeks.
Tom, that's the point. It's like that. That's all I'm asking is, are they doing it right? When five of the guys, and I get someone on Twitch was saying, look, it's routine. It's routine plays. There's a difference. I'm good with being smart. Again, common sense. You don't have to be a meathead and put your head down and run all the damn time. Be smart with that sort of stuff. But there should never be a time on a professional baseball team, especially with a team of young legs, where five of the nine of them are, you're worried about them blowing out a leg, blowing out a muscle. And then when Aloy comes back, you're thinking to yourself, boy, that was sort of quick from this surgery. Okay, he's starting today. Okay, that's good. Let's see how he does in the minor. Oh, they took him out? Oh, he felt something when he ran to first for the very first time. Oh, maybe you failed on when you brought him back. Let's try it again. And like a week or two later, he comes back. Guess what? He got shut down again. So are they doing it right? Is the no one's blaming anybody, but there seems to be an awful lot of smoke here for a team that has an injury of more than just bad luck.
I think we may have unearthed unknowingly why Tony likes Leury Garcia so much. He's the only one who can actually run to first base.
There you go.
Like, that's why he's constantly getting in the lineup and up in the order.
Like, why was he, again, and why didn't they want to play Sosa? And it was funny, I want to say, did Sosa start Saturday? Was that his first start?
Yeah, he let off. And let off.
And
let him lead off.
And I think the only run they scored that game, if I got this right, was like a hustle play that he got on base with, and then the hustle play for him. He hustled getting on base, and he hustled scoring. And and why, when Leury Garcia and some of these other guys, Josh Harrison and all of them, have struggled all year, why are you bringing up Sosa to sit him? Why not just, it's not like any of your extra guys are raking or doing anything. Play Sosa. You called them up. Pencil him in the lineup. Let's go.
This is breaking news.
What all the huddling was going on.
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This coming from Shams Charania. Kyrie Irving is going to opt into his $37 million player option for next season. This makes things interesting now for the Nets.
Irving is bypassing on multiple opt-in and trade scenarios to fulfill his four-year commitment to the Nets. What does this mean, though? Because isn't there a likelihood that he could be opt-in and traded, or no? Is Shams saying no, that he's not opting in to be traded?
There was always the possibility that he doesn't opt in, becomes a free agent, and then he can kind of sign, and or there's the sign-and-trade possibility, too, and he gets that mega supermax sort
of
deal.
This takes it off the table.
This takes that off the table.
What I think you can read into this is that there was no suitor for Kyrie to sign with a long-term deal, because the Lakers only had that $6 million option for him if he wanted to sign there. So
he is, what Shams is saying, this last sentence, the way he's wording it, is he's saying is Irving is fulfilling his commitment to KD and to the Nets.
That's one way of writing it, yep.
He wrote, Irving is bypassing on multiple opt-in and trade scenarios to fulfill his four-year commitment to the Nets and to Kevin Durant. So maybe KD was working in behind the scenes, because word is KD wants to play with him.
Yes, yes. But play Brian Windhorst from earlier today.
This was windy earlier today.
The Nets are putting out there right now that they are prepared to lose both Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. They would rather lose them both than go through what they went through last season, which was a miserable season under the situation that Kyrie Irving contributed to create.
But it sounds like, by him agreeing and hoping that he could play for 65, 70 games in a year, that they could piece it together for one more year. It sounds like now we're on to the new story where if KD and Kyrie are back in the fold and they're going to give it another try with Ben Simmons.
Assuming like the Nets don't want to, they can't find a suitor that wants to trade for Kyrie, right?
And by all indications, it seems like that's probably the case.
Yeah. Like as Mark Stein tweeted, Kyrie Irving telling Shams that he's staying with the Nets. I think this is like the way. That this just means if you've had any hope of KD, it's gone. That they're going to give it one last spin.
But it's interesting that earlier today, Windhorst is like, the Nets don't want any part of what happened last year, right?
If under the circumstances that Kyrie, you have to like give Kyrie more. Because wasn't that originally the problem? Kyrie wanted more. He wanted to opt out and be taken care of by the Nets. The Nets did not want to give him a max deal. But now he's opting in, and you don't have to give him any new money, and you're trying it again.
Yeah, so sure. So for $37 million, they're okay.
So the KD dream is now dead.
Damn. Unless Kyrie drives KD up a wall to the point where he wants to be. By the way, did you see the message that he sent Shams?
The message that Kyrie sent Shams?
Yeah, this is the message that was sent from Kyrie to Shams. Normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow. I've made my decision to opt in. See you in the fall, A11 even.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah, I know you're right. That was black. Like, really, you're doing the old I'm back thing? With everything.
That is the modern day I'm back.
So wait, he tweeted this to Shams him the story?
I think it was a text.
Oh, he texted that to Shams?
Mm-hmm.
How?
Because Shams is the only one that has this story right now.
But how did the text message become public?
Shams tweeted it out.
It was at a White Sox game. There was a guy who had a big font, and they were able to capture it.
Well done. All right, so there's that fantasy. A bowl off the table of KD. A KD dream lasted three shows.
Continuity, my friend.
Are we back to Gobert now? Where are we? Are we just going to run this thing back?
Sign me up. I'll take Gobert.
We'll ask Black what he thinks. A lot of stuff going on today. It's Waddle and Sylvie. I always do it when I'm on this side. The 5 o'clock hour of Waddle and Sylvie is brought to you by the Sanctuary Golf Course, home of the $39 Wednesday special. That includes golf and a cart. For tee times, go to golfsanctuary.com.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000 and now on FM at 100.3 HD2.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
Black and Abdallah have a full ride tonight because the Sox game is 8:38, which means it's an 8 o'clock pregame show. The news that came across right when we were going to break, Kyrie Irving is opting in, and not to opt in to be traded. He's opting in to stay with Brooklyn, and that would make KD be happy because some reason he's hitching his wagon to Kyrie. Wants him to be taken care of. So it looks like that story is over, Chris Black.
Well, Sylvia, now I have to redo my entire first segment. I had a whole Durant may be available this week. Thursday at 5 p.m. is when free agency begins in the NBA. Like, Sylvie, I was going to come down here. Hey, Sylvie, what do you think? Anything is possible this week.
Anything.
If you're a Bulls fan, you can dream big. Maybe this is the year that in free agency you make a move. You get a deal done to get one of the best players. Oh, wait, hold on. So Kyrie's back in the fold, huh? Is that the way the wind's blowing today?
I think that's the way it's blowing. Could he have come up with the conclusion that nobody wants to invest in him and it's better off just trying to play and be good this year where he then becomes a free agent and someone will want to pay him because he's committed to playing and to winning?
No, I think it comes down to money. Woj was on SportsCenter like 20 minutes ago saying that it was a realistic possibility that Kyrie may give up the $30 million, opt out of his player option, and then sign the $6 million mid-level exception with the Lakers. That was legit on the table. 20 minutes later, Shams puts out information directly from Kyrie with direct quotes saying he's opting in. So either people around the league were using Woj to get that out there that the Lakers thought that Kyrie would be available. But it just was on SportsCenter. Woj suggesting that it's a real possibility that Kyrie would opt out.
How close now is Shams and Woj on the power rankings?
I mean, go back to the draft. I mean, Woj got the first pick wrong. I know you guys were talking earlier, he had every pick except for the Bulls.
Except for the Bulls.
He also didn't have the Magic pick. He didn't have that, that first pick of the NBA draft where all day he was pushing Jabari Smith as the guy to go number one. What was it? Light rumblings, or he was
right.
The there's intentions.
His code word,
he was doing that whole thing, and then like an hour before the draft, other people started to report that the Magic were on in on Paolo Banchero, and that's what kind of happened.
I was legit pissed at Woj because I've come to trust him, especially when it comes to draft picks.
See?
And when on Thursday morning, very early in the morning, he tweets out, but he also has this whole story on ESPN.com that the top three are essentially certain. I was saying, you know what? When Woj puts it out there, money in the bank. You know what? Sports gambling's become a very profitable and lucrative business.
Oh, did you put money down?
Just saying.
You literally had money in the bank?
When Woj says, hey, man, it looks to me like, Jabari Smith is going number one, and you're shifting odds because Woj is putting it out there.
Huh.
I'm just saying it's an interesting piece of thing that I never before had really thought about, because usually when Woj comes out and tells you who the number one pick is, he's pretty solid.
Yes.
It's the first time I remember him being bad.
Yeah, when he tweets, things come off the board.
It's a Woj pop.
Yeah.
It's a phrase.
But listen, he's made it into commercials about the product. The NBA has a commercial that they ran the entire season where they're promoting Dame Dollar and all these different players, star Luka, and here's a behind-the-back pass from Luka, and all this different stuff. And in the middle of the commercial, they go, and Woj bombs. And it's like, no NBA fan is a fan of Woj bombs. That's not a part of the product. You enjoy the game. No one's sitting around going, I like the NBA because of the Woj bombs. Come on. It was a commercial that ran the entire season.
I think we like the drama of the NBA 24/7, and Woj is a part of reporting on that drama and getting those stories right.
Well, and that's also why multiple people and platforms that report are necessary. Maybe like not always one person has all the information, you know, and that's why he was just on SportsCenter. Shams just put out quotes from Kyrie. Kyrie's opting in. So what does that mean for Bulls fans now? Right? Like, because Brooklyn, if you assume he's opting in and Brooklyn wants to keep both players, which you guys played the audio of Brian Windhorst as well, saying that the Nets are making it known that they might be willing to part with both. The headache of both.
That's so Kyrie, too. Too, like, where someone's like, you know what? We probably don't want to go through Kyrie. He's like, oh, yeah?
Right, I'm back
well,
in.
I'm back.
I'm
here
back
I am,
in here.
Baby.
I don't know.
It's such a Costanza.
I feel like Bulls fans don't want any part of Kyrie. So,
No.
And you kind of win in that sense. But, you know, Thursday at 5, you guys are going to be on the air. How is this team going to get better? How do they get to the next level? And I think that's the next thing. We heard from AK and Eversley over the last couple of days. It seems as if they like continuity and this core staying together. So how do you improve keeping the core together while also trying to strive to be at the same point as the other teams at the top of the conference? Miami, Boston, Milwaukee, maybe Brooklyn and Philly.
The only way you really get markedly better is like you have the mid-level and you could go around the edges, but you have to make a trade because when you pay Zach, you're going to be over the cap. Yeah. And unless you trade one of those tradable commodities, you can't fit anyone in under your cap by just signing them. And that's why, to me, it would surprise me by what AK has shown me. And he's on, you have the bite where he's talking about the continuity. Again, I'm hoping that he's just doing what Woj said, being stealth and just saying what he needs to say now so he can surprise people when free agency starts and he makes a bigger move.
There is something to keeping players and coaches and a team together, but then you also have to see the light at the end of the tunnel and realize when you're not going to get there, right? Like, I do think there is value in the idea that every single offseason, if you don't win a championship, you have to tear it apart. Like, I do think there's value in keeping things together and allowing people to gel, allowing players like Zach LaVine, who is entering his prime. Maybe he does figure it out someday. Maybe we're raving in 2 years about Zach the way I was raving about Andrew Wiggins 2 weeks ago.
I think when you have a star, mm-hmm. that one that it's easier to do that. When you have Giannis and you want the Bucks to sort of, you know, get back together. Now you've got time with the Clippers to get healthy again, and you've got those stars. The Bulls have to be perfect if they want to be great. And you know it's not going to be perfect, and I believe they have to get better to compete with Embiid. Like, again, Philly's a team. Like, with Embiid and whatever's around him, they could one day maybe they can, but they keep pulling the trigger too. I think the Bulls are not Tatum and they're not Brown, and you can't just stand pat with DeMar and Zach thinking you're going to be the Celtics and eventually blossom.
I think that's a fair way to look at it. I would also add in, you know, look at the last two champions. You have two teams that win that weren't like collecting stars or having guys buddy up and move places to find a championship. But you did have like the all-time greatest shooter in the history of the league.
Yeah.
And then you had a guy who was drafted mid-first round who nobody thought would turn into the best player on the planet. So, like, you could look at the last 2 years and say, hey, Golden State and Milwaukee, they're not teams that found that number one free agent star, Kevin Durant.
Right. They're not super teams. Them.
But then again, you need to outwork everyone in the draft. And that, like, starts with Patrick Williams, right? Like, he has to become a superstar.
Where's Steph and where's Giannis on this team?
Dalen Terry needs to become, like, Kawhi. You know, like something crazy in the
something
draft
crazy
is what
has
to get this team to the next level.
Yeah. Good stuff today. Bleck's going to be awesome coming up next. Jesse Rogers, our only guest. We appreciate all your phone calls. We've got White Sox baseball, so Chris has a full show today of the announcement tomorrow at 4. Great work by Jeff Maller and Tyler Aki, not only doing their roles, but hosting with me as well. For no one, I'm Sylvie.
For no one?
Well, I mean,
for
Sylvie, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Monday night.
And the old reach around.